This is Your Own Best Company, a podcast for people who love to work alone. Hello there, everybody. Franklin Taggart here, and it is time for another episode of Your Own Best Company, a podcast for people who love working alone. I'm welcoming back Laura Livingston from the beautiful Roatan, Honduras. She's been a guest now a few times, and I'm excited to see where we go today. Last time we were together, Laura, we were talking a little bit about when our bodies have other plans and we're interrupted by any kind of physical ailment or difficulty in our work as entrepreneurs and solopreneurs in particular. And you shared a story of that at one point your back and your neck became so out of alignment that you really had to change a lot about the way that you did. Mm-hmm. Well, that's behind us now. Here we are in 2023. We've got a lot we can talk about, and I'm really mm-hmm. interested to see what's on your mind today. But first, just welcome back.
Thank you. I'm really happy to be here, always.
Excellent. There were a couple of things as we were getting reconnected before the recording started that I was interested to hear about. And one of them was that both of us have had kind of a slow start to 2023. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's something that's, I've been seeing that in a lot of people, particularly coaches and consultants this year. And I'm just kind of curious, is from your perspective, what do you think is going on for you in that?
It's a really good question. I think for me, so I've been in business now 5.5-ish years. And I think in some ways, after 18 years in corporate, where I force-fitted, is that a word in the past tense of force-fit, I force-fitted myself into that environment and to that structure. And now having had 5 years to create my own, you know, sort of flow and structure has been really beautiful and freeing. And I find that I have to sort of adjust, you know, my workflow and structure. It's a little different, like every year or even every 6 months. Yeah. And I think some of it is actually as simple as, you know, society tells us it's the beginning of the year, so let's get going and let's do the thing. And it's time to, you know, you're done with vacation and it's time to go. And the truth is that's never been, I do have motivation and I do have get up and go, but it's always been on my own time and on my own terms. And
exactly.
Not because it's January 3rd or whatever date it is. And so, you know, why I was saying to you before we hit record, I'm kind of laughing at myself in a little bit of a way, because why am I still expecting myself to do something in a way that actually I never really expected myself to do, or doesn't fit my nature? And so, you know, it's been probably 2 or 3 years that my January has been slow. And by slow for me, I just mean, I always take a lot of time off in December, because I, most of my adult life, I've lived far away from my family. And so holidays are a great time. Everybody's off anyway. So I always spend the holidays with my family.
Yeah.
And I always set aside that time for staycation too, and quiet me time and play time or whatever it is that I want to do with my time away from work. And this year in particular, but again, if I really think about it, it's been the last few years, I've just really enjoyed my time off, and I love my work, but I also love my time off. And and I think the gear switching from vacay mode to work mode for me, especially with a lot of time off, it has been taking me a little bit to kind of get back into whatever the new pace is for working for this year. And I did actually, to be honest, set an intention to slow down a little bit more. And so, you know,
you are.
But it naturally just, I found myself going, oh, and also I, and as you said, like, I'm noticing that with other people too. I didn't have a lot of calls on my calendar the first, week of the year. Most of my clients hit me around last week and this week. And so everybody's sort of taking their sweet time, which I love. And I just kind of found myself taking a little extra time off or saying, yeah, I was going to do that this week. I think I'll do it in 2 weeks, and just kind of really easing into what do I want to do today? And
Yeah.
different pace,
Well,
different
one of the
pace.
things that just came out of what you just said is just one of my reasons for being my own boss. One of my original reasons was that I just wanted to have that kind of flexibility. And I think that I think there's kind of a trap for those of us who are self-employed or solopreneurs or freelancers. We get into the habit of just staying on task, busy, marketing, marketing, marketing all the time. And if our calendar drops below a certain point, there's a panic that happens. And I don't know that I ever looked at it that closely before, but I felt like at the end of the year last year that I had done a lot of work, but it really hadn't moved the needle for my business. And I was just like thinking about, well, what is that about? It's like, it was one of the most productive years that I've had in terms of content creation and visibility and all of that kind of stuff. It didn't translate into client conversations. It didn't translate into new clients. It more translated into reconnecting with some older clients that I hadn't worked with before.
Interesting.
But in terms of the overall effect on my business, it was really marginal at best. And I think a part of the depression that I went through at the end of last year was just a realization that I had really worked hard and I had hoped for a better return on that. And when it didn't come, it was like, oh my God, I'm exhausted. And and now what? So I was in that depression for a few weeks toward the end of the year. Not bad, not a bad thing. We talked about that in our last meeting together. But since we last talked, one of the things that I realized was that there's a priority that I've got this year that's b more of a personal one, but it's directly related to my business, and that is that I want to be in better health. I want to have more energy. And that has to be the priority for my business this year. Because all the rest of it depends on that. Right? So one
Yeah,
of the
you are
things,
your business
well,
in
that's
a
just it.
really beautiful way, And I'm really big on the word sustainable. Like, what is it sustainable? And if you're not in the health that you could be, or your health is, I don't want to say slowing you down, because I don't think productivity is king, like to your point a minute ago, but there is a point of like, okay, if I keep going at this pace with this health scenario, I don't know what's going on specifically for you, but like, then there is it sustainable? It sounds like no. So that's why you're shifting something.
Well, I've had Graves' disease for, oh God, I don't know. 2007 was when it came on. And that has, it's an autoimmune disorder. And every now and then it comes back into play. And the last couple of years, it has really, I don't know if it's been triggered by COVID or what, but I've definitely, had a return to some of the symptoms of that. And interestingly enough, since the beginning of the year, as I've started to say, I really need to make a commitment to my body this year. What's been very interesting is that my autoimmune symptoms have subsided, which is good. I'm happy about that. It's a wonderful thing. But the thing that was really interesting is that I was really kind of worried at the beginning of the year when I was seeing that this needed to happen. I was having a big worry that it was going to shut my business down. Because I wasn't doing all the things. I wasn't,
Right.
I wasn't writing the blog post, and I wasn't making the podcast, and I wasn't doing the videos, and I wasn't everywhere all the time. And it was like there was a panic that kind of set in, saying, "Oh crap, what am I going to do now?" Well, the paradox is that as I started to get my energy back, as it started to climb back up again, I started getting calls.
Isn't that interesting?
And I didn't have to go out and figure out how to do it, or I didn't have to go out and initiate anything. They just happened. Strange, but true.
I really do like, I really do buy into the concept of sort of the energetics of, the pushing, the forcing. I'm trying. Not to say, because by the way, I want to say, like, I think this is different from you making a commitment to do a podcast episode, as an example, to do a podcast episode was it every day last
It was
year?
every
I mean,
day
that's,
last year, yeah.
and I love that. And that's a commitment you made to yourself. That's a level of consistency. There's so much value to that. So I think that's fantastic. And this is not to say that that's wrong. And if there was an element of, and I do this too, of, well, I bet I also have to try to get a new client or whatever it is that you're looking to grow, to your point of return on your investment of your time last year for all that beautiful content and productivity.
Yeah.
I do think there's an element of like almost energetic, well, not almost energetically, it is energetically like you filled your calendar. So like where is the space for the people? Like, yes, on the one hand, like technically maybe your calendar, systems that open.
Yeah.
But you energetically were busy doing all the things, right? And all for the same purpose. But I do find that, and I see this with my clients too. We do have like cycles of productivity, and I do think it's really important to put things out there. I mean,
Oh, yeah.
that's business. And I have to play with my levels of that, and it because I can get the same thing, like get into that same, I have to. We talked about that with my neck. One of the things I was trying to get content out the door and my neck was not cooperating.
Yeah.
And energetically, all you did was like relieve a little bit of that, like release the valve, right? You just relieved the pressure a little bit and said, okay, I'm gonna make a commitment to my body. Which means it translated into different action on the productivity side. And
Yeah.
the space was in your calendar. Like the energetic space was there for somebody to call you. And I do think that that is at play, along with everything else from mindset to strategy to all the other practical elements of running a business.
Yeah,
It's fascinating to me.
absolutely. I have a yoga teacher who has said for now, I've known her for almost 2 decades, and she says, everything is energy. Everything is energy. Full stop. And that's the thing, is like, I think we forget that sometimes. And then the other part of it that's really interesting as you bring it up is like, it's interesting what happens after we've been in kind of a trying to control things mode, and then we let go of that and release that. It's interesting to see what happens energetically when we do. And I don't like to get in conversations very much about ego, because I think ego is one of the most misunderstood features of humanity that there is. There's a lot of folks that kind of put it out there as the enemy. Quite honestly, it's just a survival mechanism. But the thing that's really interesting is like the only conversation that I like to have that involves ego is to talk about that shift from attempting to control and releasing that need. Because there is such a marked difference in the way that life happens when that goes on. And I just had an interesting conversation the other day with someone and hopefully we're going to turn it into a podcast, but it was all about that she was fascinated between the I she was fascinated with the idea that commitment is actually a form of surrender. And
wow.
One of the things that I see there is the same concept of that when I actually commit, it's not about me trying to dominate. It's about me releasing into, me allowing energy to go where it needs to go, rather than to force fit it wherever it needs to go.
I love that. There's a really beautiful intentionality to that too.
Talk to me about intentionality. Yeah.
I think it's funny. I'm like even trying to figure out like what are the words to describe, but I think so much for me in my life has come down many times to sort of a decision, like commitment, which is to me setting a clear intention. To stay with the concept of body, like with my neck last year, I got to a point where I was like, you know what? I'm no longer a victim to this injury. I'm committed. I've decided. I am intending that I am now not just like trying to deal with the pain, but I'm moving towards being done with it. I am moving towards, this is no longer, you know, I'm now on a path to some element of recovery, completion with this, yeah. As opposed to this sucks. And I'm just my whole, you know, life's focus right now is dealing with the pain and trying to find relief from the pain, which of course, what I really wanted was to be done with it. But there was something really powerful. And I did surrender to the pain, to the chaos in my brain, to all of the things. So I don't know. I've never really thought about like how to differentiate, but I think intentionality and like committing to something and making a clear decision is sort of there's like magic to that.
Yeah.
Energetically, it is a surrender, but it's also I'm taking charge of my life's path too. And that's a different vibe to me. That's a different energy and a different mindset than controlling.
Yeah.
And trying and proving and whatever, you know, other word you want to stick into that.
Yeah. Bucket. Well, I think there's something to that. And another part of what you're pointing to for me is the idea that my own understanding of commitment in the last several years has shifted from one of the commitment is an act of willpower. It's actually more along the lines of releasing resistance. Mm-hmm. And that to me feels different than willpower. It's like with willpower, you're really trying to pull yourself up by your bootstraps and just, you know, and go plowing through whatever it is that's in front of you.
It's forced.
Yeah. But the thing that's really interesting about commitment as a form of releasing resistance is that resistance is the thing that's keeping your energy from going where it needs to go. Mm-hmm. And most of the time, resistance is something that's a response that we have to a mindset or a thought process or some kind of a mental construct that we're holding. And when we let go of that resistance, when that resistance is released, that's kind of my definition of surrender as well, mm-hmm. is just, you know, surrendering, letting go, opening, releasing the resistance, and letting the energy go where it needs to go. All of a sudden, things become possible that when I was in that willpower mode, they were impossible.
Yep. Yep, I feel it.
So it's an interesting time of year, and it's like for the first time I came into the year not knowing what I wanted. Not knowing what I wanted to do, not having any clarity at all. Mm-hmm. And what's really interesting is that's probably the least resistant state that I've entered a year with in decades.
Right? I love that. But can I ask you a question about that? Because I think
Sure.
sometimes when people don't know what they want, they're just kind of cool with that. But then other times when people don't know what they want, there's a big, stress around that, right? Which is an added level of resistance. So it sounds to me like you were in the first camp.
Yeah, probably.
You're just,
As you describe it, it sounds familiar. Yeah.
like not all too worried about it, just, oh, I don't know what I want this year, as opposed to, oh my God, I don't know what I want this year.
I think there was some concern at a certain point because I have a routine at the end of the year usually where I review the previous year and I look toward the next year and kind of identify the projects that I want to finish and the people that I want to reach out to and the relationships that I want to form. That was hard to come by this year. And that did bother me because usually my imagination can stir that stuff up with that, at the drop of a hat. And this year, it wasn't readily available. And I think that was related mostly to that state of depression that I was in. I find it very difficult to access my imagination when depression is the state of mind at the moment.
Yeah, I've experienced moments of depression in my life too, and I think there's that could be a whole nother topic, but I think the silver lining or the no the I think something that depression does, at least to me, I'll own my experience of it, is it pulls me, even though I think sometimes depression is about the past or the future, like really, but it somehow pulls me into the present of like, I can't even deal with that. Like you're saying, can't even bring up imagination and decide what I want to do because I'm so in the thing right now, and however light or heavy that is. And yeah, I don't think for the most part, creativity and depression go together, so easily, or maybe imagination, and that's not to say that other people might not have different experiences, but that makes a lot of sense to me. And I think that, I've had conversations with several people recently who just are really not happy with the year they had at, for whatever reason last year. And that can, I think, make it hard to be like, okay, what are we gonna create this? Oh God, okay. Like there's a grieving process I think we have to go through at any level when something isn't the way we want it. Sometimes it's quick, like, oh, they don't have, what I want at the restaurant. I guess I'll need to order something else. But you do have to take a minute, oh crap, I really wanted the thing, that I ordered. Or something, as important as business results or whatever your goals were. But I do think there's a grieving process, and that doesn't always go beautifully with like, yay, what's coming next?
I
And
think
honoring, it sounds like you honored that.
the grieving process, I think one of the things that's happened is that we've kind of reserved it only for death and extreme loss. And the truth of the matter is like it's just an emotional adjustment process to whatever our circumstances are, right? And that can be for anything of any size or type. It's like you said, there is an emotional adjustment that we have to go through if we're disappointed on some level. Now, I'm not going to compare that level of grieving with those significant losses. I think, there's certainly a continuum and a whole lot of shades of grief, but it's so built into our experience here. Those emotional adjustment periods, and that's all that grief is an emotional adjustment to a new reality. It's like it's so built in that we probably don't recognize it almost 100% of the time that it's going on.
And I don't think as a society we're doing better, but I don't think we do a great job of, helping our children through grief processes of any kind, right? To your point, it doesn't need to be about death. There's a lot of other grief processes that we go through in life and business, in relationships and all kinds of things, and ordering food. I don't know why that's my example because I did that last night. But I think grief is it's one of the emotions that people are more afraid of and feel that they don't understand and just want it to go away. And they want grieving people to go away from them when they're having a good time. And It's not something that we feel really, I don't think as a society, like knowledgeable about, or that we don't know what to do with, you know.
Well, there's a part of me that wants to suggest that we stop compartmentalizing emotional experiences and recognize, like you talked about earlier, the cyclical nature of life and really understand that those good times are a part of the emotional experience as well. But it's like a wheel, and it's like the good times are on part of the wheel, and then you've got the other part that, you're going through the dip, and then you come back up again, and it's like a healthy human, I think, experiences the whole spectrum, all going all the way around the circle. And I think when we're talking about disease and illness, we're talking about when a person gets stuck at a certain point. I mean, there are people that are in a manic phase and have been stuck in a manic phase for years, and they're just as miserable and diseased and ill as someone who's been in that depressed phase for years, you know? And I think there's a tendency for us to kind of categorize them and compartmentalize emotional experiences instead of recognize them as a holistic, part of who we are. And I think there's a mistake there. I think we cut off a certain aspect of ourselves to do that.
I agree. And I think we judge ourselves
Oh,
for
yeah.
not having the right emo, you know, because so often we have conflicting emotions about things, right? And like,
Oh,
well,
yeah.
what the hell do you do with that? And I think I don't know. I think we do. I see that so often just in the mindset work that I do with clients, but in my own as well. Like, there's the, I'm going to butcher the story, but there's a sort of a legend of like the second arrow, and the idea is like the first arrow is the thing that you're dealing with, the depression, but then the second arrow is put there by you, which is the judgment of yourself, or the depression about the depression. I'm having depression and now I'm freaking sad about it, so now I'm just gonna lament over and over, right? And it's like the second arrow, you can almost like quote unquote recover from the first arrow if you give yourself a minute, but if you're gonna throw the second arrow in, you're just doing yourself a disservice, and that's also normal, and then we can't judge ourselves for judging ourselves for having the emotion. But I think that self-judgment or criticism or just wishing it was different kind of often is the second arrow or the added layer that not knowing how to deal with it is the added layer. And I think, like you said, I mean, emotions are just emotions and it's just part of life. And ego is gonna just be an ego, and because we have a human brain and we're gonna self-sabotage, and just it's okay, and just finding ways to deal with it, and is sort of, I think, the path to joy and to living as healthy of a life as you can. But
Well, something that you're bringing up there is actually something that I've really been intrigued by and interested in for the last couple of years. And that is the idea, we hear people talk about expanding consciousness all the time, but we rarely ask, what does that actually mean? Well, one of the things that you just described was actually an expanded consciousness experience. It's like when you're able to be self-aware enough to say, this is what I feel going on with me, and you're able to then give it some space and to create some space around it in your awareness, in your conscious field, and all of that stuff. All of a sudden, it has there's a new level of choice that you have. You're not stuck in the same old rut of having to react like you have before. And that expanded consciousness is simply just stopping for a moment and just saying, oh, boom, I feel depressed right now. And not necessarily ascribing that to be a problem, but just creating the space around it so that you can say, well, what do I need to do about that? Is there anything that I need to do about that? That creates another level of consciousness around it. And so the more that we do that kind of work, it's like all of a sudden, it's not, when we do have those depressed moments, they don't become frozen in our architecture, right? They just become a momentary experience in our consciousness, and as our consciousness grows around whatever it is that we're doing, all of a sudden new possibilities emerge that we never have entertained before. And you described that beautifully when you were talking about, being aware of what you're going through, and maybe not trying to do anything about it.
Right.
Maybe that's enough.
Yeah. I mean, it reminds me of being in yoga classes, and it's like, notice how your body feels in this pose. Don't try to change it, or just notice what's happening with your breath right now. Don't try to change it, and it's just like, what's happening? Just being aware, that awareness, whether it's being tuned into your body or tuned into recognizing what emotions, like, what's going on here, and then leaning into it, or sort of letting it be, like you said, that's the surrender, to use your other word, that of just saying, okay, this is, and finding ways to just notice, is that extra consciousness. And I think too, I'll steal one of, I wish I could remember which one it was, but I had a professor in graduate school who would say, isn't that interesting? Aren't I an interesting person that I have this, limiting belief system popping up right now, or that I believed this because I got that from, I'd created this belief system from my family as a kid, or whatever it is. Like, anytime something comes up that we really want to judge, or really want to move through, or get away, or whatever it is, that, it's a way of coming back and staying present with that emotion, to your point, and just noticing it and letting it be. And then it also adds this, like, oh, I'm just an interesting person. Isn't my brain an interesting place, as opposed to what the hell is wrong with me?
What did I just do?
And I think, it is, I think for me, my experience of learning more and more about this experience with our emotions and the way that we operate, the way our brains operate, more and more I move through those feelings actually quicker, just because I let them be.
You're not in a state of resistance. You're in a state of allowing. Yeah, it's a beautiful
And then
thing.
I get, and it really, like, it's the weird, like, counterintuitive, like, when I let myself cry or give in to the sadness or give in to the whatever, the guilt, the whatever is coming up, like, it's almost like that's the quicker path to a moment of joy again. And it's so not intuitive, and it's quite a practice. Not to say that I am, by any stretch, like, I've got it all figured out, but it really, I do find so oftentimes, like, that is my quicker path
So
to a calmer mind.
talk a little bit more in detail about what that looks like in practice, because I have a feeling that there are going to be some people here that may be faced with very frustrating emotional states and situations right now, and they're wondering just what in the hell you're talking about. When you talk about that you're allowing yourself to go through it. In practice, what does that look like?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'll just caveat this with, there are appropriate times for emotions to be dealt with in therapy and in mental health places and with mental health providers, and I am neither. But from a coaching perspective, and particularly in my world, it's like, how does that, what's the psychology behind you as a business owner? What's the psychology behind you at work? Is really, so just to caveat that. But I think, there are millions of things that I could share, but I think I'll just try to simplify it by saying, I really actually love the term mindfulness, because it's just, or observation, of like, oh, what's happening right now, I think is a much more neutral approach. And that's maybe another word to use is like, how can I look at this from a neutral perspective? How can I just, you know, observe what's happening? There's a beautiful quote about trees. I wish I could remember who it was. And the quote is basically like, hey, so when you go out into the woods and you look at the trees, you don't go, hey, why is that one so tall? And why is that one so small? And that one has a crooked branch. You just let them be trees.
Yeah.
And why can't, you know, why, like, the challenge is to look at yourself like that or your emotions as they come up like that. And not to say that, you know, this isn't a striving for perfection thing. I think it is a practice. I think it's something that we, over time, if we set an intention around and we, you know, keep going with it, we get better and better at it. But I think it really is, you know, just noticing what we're experiencing. And oftentimes we find that the thing we're afraid of is just to feel the feeling, and that actually the fear of the feeling is more than the actual, is worse than the actual feeling that we're afraid to feel.
Very cool.
That helpful? Is that covered?
Yeah,
like,
I think that
did
gets
I
us
describe
a little
it?
Closer.
Okay.
I'm curious though, like, tell me about, like, if there are physical sensations that accompany it, because all of the emotions are physically embodied. We know that the, you know, the experience of emotion is a physical one. It's not a mental one so much.
Yeah.
It's kind of like where the body and the mind meet. So tell me a little bit about the relationship between what you're thinking and what you're feeling in your body.
I love that question. I think there are some commonalities, but I would just say everybody feels their emotions in their bodies differently. So the first thing I would ask yourself is, what am I noticing when you're having a feeling? What am I noticing in my body?
Yeah.
Because a lot of times when I, like a lot of times my sadness will be preceded by anger, and I'll feel something sort of, like I'll get hot, right? Like whatever is kind of coming up. It's almost like coming, like the stress and my heart races. And then I can sort of feel like the flush or the anger kind of rising into my body. And then sometimes it's like, once I let that be, then it's like, oh, it's really sad. This is really just upsetting to me.
Yeah.
And I'm actually not pissed as much, you know. But I digress. But I do think oftentimes we'll feel it in our stomachs. It could, lots of different experiences, like a tightness in your stomach or a churning, or just like a, people who make gut decisions are really good at making gut decisions. A lot of times they'll say, I don't know, I just feel it here.
Yeah.
And then same with your heart. That's another place, heart or chest. That's another place that a lot of people will feel some sense of good or bad labeling emotion. And then I think the throat sometimes kicks in as well. Those are the three places that I find to be the most common, but you can feel emotions anywhere. And the body workers and the somatic practitioners of the world will tell you that our bodies hold emotions, particularly like almost, this may not be the right word, but like a locked in emotion in our body from traumas or experiences in childhood. And that's why you might like go to get body work done, massage, acupuncture, whatever. And you know, you might experience some like, why am I really crying right now? Or why am I experiencing some sort of emotional release? Because they hit something that had been, you know, trapped in the body, so to speak. But we do feel, and I think some people are more tuned into their bodies than others, but it's also a practice and something that you can cultivate if that's something that's interesting to you. I think it's absolutely possible for all of us to tune in to the body and start to pay attention. And that's also a way to like lean into the emotion of like, oh, isn't this interesting? Every time I, you know, talk to my ex, I have this feeling, or every time I talk to that client, I feel it here in my body. You know, what's, isn't that interesting? I wonder what that's about.
Yeah. It's all a very interesting experiment, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I think again, you know, what you just described was yet another way of expanding your consciousness. And the way that I look at consciousness is that it's kind of like a zoom on a camera. It's like it can open up to include, you know, a huge picture, or it can zoom into the most minute details. And it's like the way that we feel at any given time tends to be related to how wide our lens is in the moment. If our lens is really constricted and contracted, it's like we're not letting enough information in. And so that upset becomes more crystallized. That upset becomes more of a knot in my stomach, right? And then the other,
it's almost like blinders with the minute focus. It's like all you can see is the problem and you can't see the solution, or you can't see, you know, the myriad of bigger perspective of what's actually the truth of what's happening. I love that.
Totally. So I think, you know, one of the things that I always give myself when I'm feeling, you know, some kind of an upset in my body and I notice that, one of the things that I like to concentrate on is to get away from focusing on those little nitpicky thoughts that I'm having and just really pay attention to that energetic core that's being affected in my body and giving it some space to open, giving it some space to change and move and to, you know, because that tends to give me the comfort that I need and kind of releases me from the cycle of, you know, rehashing things over and over and over and over and fixating on them in my mind. I don't know. So,
and I think that's a great example of like, there's moments to lean in and moments to pay attention and like explore your feelings. And then I think when we have that over and over and over and over, I feel like a lot of times that's where we can just stay stuck in that. And for as much as I love mindset work, like you can over mindset work yourself.
Oh, yeah.
You can just, you know, over psychoanalyze yourself. And I think there's a moment where it's like, okay, I'm stuck in this pattern. I've thought this thing to death. I've felt this thing to death. I'm going to go take an action that would represent something that I actually want as opposed to this thing. And that's one of the things I like to challenge my clients with in their work is like, okay, we're over here again. What's something you can do? Because that's the other place. Like, I think sometimes we need to do some mindset work so that we can take an action. And sometimes we need to take an action so that our minds can kind of catch up to the new way of being, or like starting to create a new habit with an action.
Yeah.
As opposed to like your point earlier, the willpower element of it. There's only, you know, willpower only takes you so far.
Yeah. But it takes me to right there. And then it's it takes me.
And there's science that backs that up too,
yeah,
by
right?
the way. There's so much science that backs that up. It's real. It is real.
Tell me a little bit about, like, I'm very curious with all the things that we talked about. It's like, I'm very curious what your experience of inspired action is.
I love that word. I think for me, I love it because I didn't know what the opposite of hard work and hustle and grind and prove it and push it and do it the way everybody's been telling me to do it my whole life. I didn't know what the opposite of that was. I knew that didn't feel good to me. And I knew that, and I think some people it actually feels good, but it didn't work for my creative free spirit. And yet I was told that whatever I could come up with to make it opposite was not right. Right. Like the world was not okay with that part of me. So what I love about inspired action is, to me, it's the healthy version of the hustle grind. It's, you know, it's the, I'm listening to myself so deeply that when I take some action, it is truly inspired. It is, I know that today is the day that I want to sit down and talk to Franklin.
Yeah.
I'm so excited and ready and thrilled to sit down and talk to Franklin. Or, you know, all the times that I've moved or changed jobs or created something new in my business, I might have had, you know, thinking and thoughts floating around about something, but then all of a sudden something kind of just comes out and it's like, now I'm ready to take the first step.
Yeah.
That's inspired action. And we can't, you know, I think the more we pay attention to ourselves and the more that we grow personally, the more we have an opportunity to sort of pick up on those nuggets, pick up on those moments, because they're there all the time.
Yeah.
But that's when, for me, I can work until midnight, not because I think I'm trying to prove something, but because I'm so flippin' focused and inspired and in something that it's like, I can't be bothered. I actually have to make myself eat, because when I'm in those moments, I'll just create. And it's like, great. And it's part of my genius. And then also my body needs to eat. But I think yeah. those are moments of maybe extreme moments of inspired action, but it can even just be, you know, going to a networking meeting and trusting yourself to say, I really want to talk to that person, because yeah. it's almost not a choice anymore, because it just feels so clearly like this is the person I'm drawn to. Next thing I know, I'm on that person's calendar, because I just feel drawn to have that conversation, not because I formulated it through my brain and thought they might be a potential client.
Yeah.
So I think it can be small,
yeah,
seemingly small, you know, actions. Go ahead.
They didn't check all the boxes on your avatar worksheet.
Right, exactly. So never mind. Right. But yeah, it's just following it, following that little moment of inspiration, or following the draw. And I think that's where for me, the body comes in too, is like, I feel drawn. My body kind of pulls me or tugs me sometimes in a direction, to try something, to do something, to talk to somebody.
It's been really interesting to me that many of the conversations that I've had with clients and friends and colleagues, well, probably, I don't know, in the last 6 months or so, have been around that. It's like a lot of them are, you know, a lot of them have worked hard and a lot of them have been really successful, but they know somewhere within themselves that the level of hustle and the level of activity that they've been able to muster so far isn't something that they can continue to do.
Yeah.
And so one of the things that I've been working a lot with folks on is inspired action. Mm-hmm. Not that I'm a master of it by any stretch of the imagination, but one of the things that I think is really important, especially for people who are very sensitive and intuitive, mm-hmm. is that we need to honor that. We need to honor that aspect of ourselves and listen to it. You know, it's like when we listen to that part of ourselves that does say, that person over there.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't need to know why. You just know it's that person over there. And it's like getting across the hall and saying, I was kind of prompted to come and introduce myself. And here I am. And I'm interested to know you, and mm-hmm. tell me, who are you?
Yeah.
You know, that kind of a thing. I think that there's something to that, that more and more people are finding is essential to their well-being, not only in their regular life, but in their business and in their work and in their career path, all the above. One of the things mm-hmm. that I would be interested to do, and maybe it's something that we could facilitate, would be to do an inspired action challenge, which just totally sounds like a contradiction in terms. But what if we were to say, for the next period of time, maybe for the next week, my commitment is to inspired action. I'm not going to mm-hmm. force anything, and I'm not going to follow anybody else's blueprint, but what my inner guide prompts me to do,
mm-hmm.
you know, I'm curious where it would lead people.
I like it. I like it. There's a book that it's funny, I've not read the book, but I remember still somebody telling me about the book.
Yeah.
And in it there, and I don't even know the name of it, in it there is an exercise. So it's kind of along these lines, and I'll share this. It's kind of saying, set aside time in your day when you, and maybe set a timer so that you don't have to pay attention to getting to the next thing you're going to, but set aside a certain amount of time, like 30 minutes to start, and it doesn't have to be every day, but set aside, take a moment and do an exercise where you set aside like 30 minutes and you kind of just do that. The 30 minutes has no agenda other than I'm just going to do whatever I'm inspired to do, whatever I feel like doing. And if that's sitting on the couch, staring at the ceiling, that's time well spent. And it's a practice in listening to that part of us, right? It's a practice of, well, I can't do this every day, all the day, because I have this job and this business and blah, blah, blah. But here I've set aside time to just see what that see what happens. Yeah. And I think if this is a foreign concept to you, or if it's something you want to get back to, you haven't got done in a while, finding places where you can freely, right? There's no risk, you know, this doesn't have nothing to do with your business. You're not, it just is 30 minutes to yourself and see what happens. You might paint, you might call a friend, you might work, you might, who knows, but it's drawn to do, not like what I think I should do, have to, supposed to do, you know?
Yeah.
And it's an interesting exercise.
Now there's some people that are going to probably point out that, what if you have to do dishes? Well, this could also apply to chores. And one of the things that I think we've got to look at is that one of the reasons that chores are a problem for many folks is that we have a high state of resistance toward them. We're not acting from a point of inspiration with our chores. We are acting from a point of, I've just got to do this, you know, which is a high state of resistance, right?
Yes. Yes.
So one of the things that I think is really interesting is like when I enter into washing the dishes and I am in a high state of allowing, it gets done quickly. And generally that's actually kind of an intrinsically rewarding time internally for me. Mm-hmm. I don't know why. There is a sense of accomplishment when I see the clean dishes and the clean counter and, you know, the kitchen that looks better than it did before. Mm-hmm. But the thing that's really interesting is like the inspired action can apply to anything.
Yeah.
And really what it seems to be more about is being in a state of openness and allowing and receptivity rather than in a space of judgment and should and mm-hmm. resistance, right?
Yeah. And in fact, one of the reasons why there are so many, I could talk about dishwashing for years because I used to really hate it. I still a little bit do, but what I think you're experiencing in those moments is actually like a form of meditation or a form of mindlessness, people say, like, I just want to do a mindless task. There's something about giving yourself, your brain, a chance to just zone out or to only focus on something that's not hard.
Oh, yeah.
It's not problem solving. That if you look at like the science behind how we release resistance, we stop. We stop the thing, right? So that might be a period of time where even if you have crazy resistance thoughts and you're anxious or whatever your thought processes are before you sit down and wash the dishes, when you're washing the dishes, you're probably just focused and that gets a rest and your pattern interrupting, you know, that. And then from that space, kind of back to your point about depression and trying to create, you know, New Year's intention, you know, from that space, then you could say, ooh, now what do I want to do? Right.
Yeah.
Cause you sort of like clean the slate. And I think that's what a lot of yoga or meditation, or even just working out or doing the dishes, you can find those kinds of things anywhere. If you choose to allow yourself to experience them that way, it's kind of interesting.
Well, this has been fun.
Always.
Lots of fun. So, if there's any interest out there that anybody would have on the, if you heard that idea of the Inspired Action Challenge, and
I
you're
love the
interested
name
at
of it.
all in that, why don't you just send me an email, franklin@franklintaggart.com, and let me know that you're interested, and we'll rope Laura into it as well if she's interested, and anybody that she knows who would be interested in participating. But if it sounds like a fun experiment to you and you'd like to participate, let's put it together. Let me know. Anything you want to finish up with today, Laura? This has been a lot of fun.
This has been so fun. No, I love it. I like the I like the name because it is sort of contradictory, and I kind of love that so much. So no, I think we let's wrap it with that. That's perfect. Perfect way to end this one.
Very cool. So, if you're looking for Laura, Laura Livingston is at .co,
Yes.
and I'm at franklintaggart.com. And as always, I appreciate you listening to your own best company. We love it when you subscribe, we love it when you share it, and we love it when you review. So, if you do any of those things, God bless you, and all my thanks. Laura, thanks for being my guest again. This has been wonderful.
Absolutely. Love it. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Your Own Best Company. If you enjoyed the show, would you do me a favor and subscribe on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or your favorite podcast host? If you really love it, leave me a review or share it with your circles. If you feel like your career is reaching a dead end, or you're feeling a deep sense of dissatisfaction in your work right now, I help people discover their gifts and then find or create new opportunities that are the best fit for their talent, experience, and lifestyle. Email me at coaching@franklintaggart.com for more information. I also help people start, finish, and launch creative projects, and I offer an ongoing marketing mastermind for solopreneurs and freelancers. More information on these programs and services can be found at franklintaggart.com. Thanks again for spending this time with me.